So Bitcoin has a lot of utility because it's so secure and secure way to move money. I'd say if you want to spend it at Starbucks, that's not really how you want to use Bitcoin. It's just like you don't take gold coins to Starbucks and try to spend gold coins or your Picasso painting, you know? But it doesn't mean it's not useful.
And joining us now on Speak Up, the co-founder and head of research from Fundstrat, Tom Lee. And Tom, I got my Rao's table coming up, so I'll be sure to invite you. You had a good time that night, right? That was fun, no?
Oh, man, I had the best time. I think you had some great guests, too. I really enjoyed, you know, having dinner with Scott and the other folks there. So it was,
We had Scott Wapner at the table. I have to lose weight in preparation for that. Unfortunately, I just got back from Disney World, and it is literally, you inhale the air in Disney World, you gain weight. It is a brutal thing. So speaking of weight gain and weight loss, I'm losing weight in the marketplace right now, Tom. I feel like I'm in a crypto correction. I also feel like there's a mini bear market going on inside of a bull market. Tell me what the hell is going on in the stock market and the crypto markets as you and I are speaking.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think the simplest explanation is that both markets staged some spectacular gains since October of last year. You know, the S&P was up 5 months in a row, up 29% through March, and April was down 4%. And I think just sort of zooming out, to me, that's really healthy because there's only 1 year in history we found where the stock market was able to grow, you know, to stage gains for actually 11 consecutive months. So, you know, if April was a profit-taking month for crypto and stocks and, you know, a little bit of deleveraging, I think it's pretty healthy. I know that it's painful, and I know every time markets wobble, that's when top callers come out. And I think that's why it's probably confusing to a lot of viewers, because maybe they're wondering if this is the top. And for many reasons, you know, we think we're still not late cycle for either Bitcoin or for the S&P.
Okay, so give us a couple of those reasons. Peel off a couple of those reasons.
Well, yes. I'm part of our framework for Bitcoin is that it is a risk-on asset. I mean, it is uncorrelated with other assets. That's why it has had been such a good portfolio diversifier, meaning it's good to own Bitcoin even if you own stocks and bonds and real estate and, you know, art and commodities. But the, you know, main drivers for why we think you're in a risk-on cycle is, number one, we have a really strong U.S. economy. And I know it's been so good for so long, people think maybe we have to have a recession. But, you know, as they say, expansions don't die of old age. The second is that the Fed has been really hawkish or running tight monetary policy, you know, raising interest rates. And they did that for 2 years at the fastest pace really in history. And that mindset is hard for a lot of people to give up. But the Fed no longer wants to be tightening interest rates. You know, they want to find a window where they can either stop hiking or actually begin to cut rates. And that's historically really good for stocks. The third reason is that stocks aren't expensive. And by proxy, Bitcoin's not expensive because, you know, you can sort of get equity-like valuation metrics for Bitcoin. But the median stock in the S&P is at 16 times earnings. Well, the 10-year's at almost 5%. Since 1937, when the 10-year is between 4 and 5%, the average PE is 20 times. So the stock market is 4 PE multiple points lower than where it should be, given where interest rates are. And the last reason is there's so much dry powder because there's $6 trillion of cash on the sidelines. Hedge funds have actually been shorting at the highest rate in this market since 2022. Retail short interest of equity ETFs increased at the highest rate since 2022. Retail sentiments turned negative. So, you don't have signs of a top. You actually have signs of people, actually what typically occurs at a bottom. So I think that we're kind of being fooled by the April turmoil. And I think that's why it's a buying opportunity for both Bitcoin and stocks. Now, it doesn't mean it's going to turn around today, but I don't think this is a top.
Okay. I obviously agree with you. I want to talk about Bitcoin for a second because Bitcoin is probably one of the most confusing things for people to understand. And you understand it better than most. I remember the famous interview where you were telling people Bitcoin at 5,000 that they needed to allocate. Now it's at 60,000. You've had a prescience on this like no other. And so what is Bitcoin? Is it a store of value? Is it digital gold? Is it an early adopting technical asset that's still in the early stages of adoption that's scaling? What is it, Tom?
Yeah, it's actually all the above. If you ask me, is Bitcoin a breakthrough in technology? It certainly is because it's proven to be the most secure way to store information in the world. You know, in the 15 years of Bitcoin's existence, on the database of Bitcoin, there's been zero fraudulent entries. There is no database in the world, no banking system in the world that can make the claim. You know, if you look at JP Morgan's ledger, 6% of all financial transactions on JP Morgan's bookkeeping are suspicious. They actually have to employ people to make sure they aren't fake transactions. Bitcoin is also probably the purest form of trust. It's something that I think a lot of those who have understood that trust is central to the functioning of the entire global economy. Bitcoin has really proven to be a trusted network when you have anonymous parties on both sides. There is no other network today, no way to actually transact money or even engage in society where you can say, I can trust 100% of all transactions, even though I have no idea who's on the other side. There is every other way to transact in the world requires what they call an oracle. Someone has to stand between, and Bitcoin doesn't require that. And in terms of as an asset, it's kind of I got a proven history. It's been around 15 years. I mean, a simple thing to answer oneself is how many trillion-dollar markets have been around 15 years and then disappeared? Never happened in history. There's no such thing as Bitcoin is going to go to zero. Or it would be unprecedented. And you know what? You might say, well, the government might try to shut it down, but there have been many attempts to dismantle Bitcoin's network. You know, China banned mining. The U.S. employed a lot of sanctions. But ultimately, financial institutions are starting to grudgingly realize Bitcoin's actually a great solution. That's why BlackRock and others are now supporting it through a spot Bitcoin ETF.
So Tom, we're in the we're in the weirdest macro environment that I've seen in the 36 years that I've been in the investment community. Some people are calling it stagflation. Some people are saying that the economy is super hot. Other people are saying, my God, the small businesses are not making their rent. We're at the highest, I think it's 42% of the businesses are skipping rent payments to try to keep their stores. And so we have this whole mixed bag. When you look into the crystal ball, there's good things about the economy. There's bad things about the economy. There's actually okay things about inflation. Recent inflation data look negative, but feels like it is trending down. Tell me what's going on in the macroeconomic situation for the United States and the world.
Yeah, I'll give you my best guess, because you're right. It is a very confusing time. We know it's a confusing time because if it was not a confusing time, the Fed itself could be very decisive. But we know the Fed itself, FOMC, is having a hard time deciding exactly what you're saying. Is the economy so strong that inflation could flare up? Or is the economy so weak because of all the data points that you see on the weak side that they need to cut? And here's what I think. Why I think it's confusing. I mean, number one, we are transitioning because we know that in 2021, through most of 2022 and early 2023, the economy, U.S. economy, experienced a lot of inflation. And maybe we all agree it was because of, you know, supply shocks and easy money. And then there was all that stimulus. And that combined really caused a lot of inflation. But now the question is inflation largely behind us, or could it flare up? Now, I think if we were to look at what companies are saying, like, so we can easily parse through earnings conference calls, and we're halfway through earnings season, so we can see what companies are even saying for the first quarter. Mentions of inflation as a problem, pricing pressures, wage increases, squeezes from inflation, they're at the lowest level of mentions in 2 years. So corporate America is saying there's no inflation, but the official data is saying the opposite, like CPI, which it really is the headline grabber. That's the inflation report. Or like yesterday's employment cost index showed a lot of wage inflation. So I think that's what confuses markets. And that, of course, worries the Fed. But I think if you're listening to this and saying, oh, Tom, prices are too high, so there's a lot of inflation, I think the one thing we have to keep in mind is the Fed isn't trying to get prices to go down. The fact that prices went up because of all the things I mentioned, it's kind of permanent. Like McDonald's, Big Macs, whatever their price is now, that's kind of permanent. But what the Fed wants to do is make sure they're not going to keep going up in price. And that's already happening. I mean, I don't know if you're watching Starbucks today, but they are down 11, 12% because they reported earnings. Starbucks is kind of a frontline consumer product everyone uses every day. People are not paying those prices anymore. They're trading down. Starbucks same store comps are like the weakest in several years. So I would just say, I don't think inflation is the problem, but it's not showing up in the statistics.
So you and I both look at the Trueflation app, which is basically a decentralized aggregator. It draws from all over the society to come up with an inflation number. The year-on-year change, according to Trueflation, is 2.22%, which is down slightly. U.S. government is reporting 3.5%. I guess, you know, I'm a big believer in the Trueflation number as opposed to the CPI number. The Fed knows that they made mistakes coming into this, right? They said that the inflation was transitory. Now they're presuming that it's secular. I'm taking the position that it's neither transitory or secular, Tom, but it's just taken longer to get it out of the system. And now that we're post-COVID, post the monetary and fiscal tremendous stimuluses, if you will, that this thing will settle down and we'll be cutting rates by the end of the year. Do I have that wrong?
I'm in your camp. The Fed, if we're relying on the Fed to tell us the state of inflation, as a lot of folks are doing, the Fed is going to be behind the curve for exactly the things you described, because the Fed can only make a decision and tell us about inflation when their statement will convince 90% of the bond market that the bond market will accept. It's kind of like the Fed can't be too early in saying the inflation war is over because the bond market could revolt. And I agree with you. Trueflation measures 2.5 million consumer products, and it's a real-time measurement. And Trueflation doesn't have, 50 years of history, but it's a pretty good approximation for what we call the median CPI, like if you took the median component. And it actually kind of dovetails, because if you took the CPI report of the 320 products listed in CPI, the median CPI is 1.76%. And that's actually below the long-term average of 2.2. The reason official inflation is higher is right now is two components are really punching above their weight. One is housing, because that's 40% of the CPI basket. And that's showing 6% inflation. It should be closer to 4%. And the second is auto insurance, it's only something like 5% of the CPI basket, but it's growing at 21% year over year. So it's actually contributing to almost 0.6 points of CPI inflation. I think if we look through those, I agree. I don't think inflation's really a problem. I mean, people may not like it, but you know, like they go to the grocery store, it's not inflating anymore. It's just prices are high. It's not, they're not necessarily going to go down, but they've stopped going up. Same thing with cars. And that's 20% of CPI is cars.
So how many interest rate cuts do you think happened this year? If you believe that they are going to happen based on what you're saying?
As a reference point, there's a way to measure how many interest rate cuts the financial markets are expecting. It's using Fed fund futures, and they're right now it's down to one cut. So from the start of the year, the Fed fund futures were looking for six, it's down to one. And many economists originally thought three, and now the ones that are saying three are kind of on their heels. I think the Fed will cut 2 to 3 times this year. Mm. But that's because I think the April CPI will be the first of the series of CPIs that show inflation is doing far better than the consensus believes.
All right, so I'm in your camp. I got it at 3 times, and people now think I'm crazy. I've got fixed income traders. You know, unfortunately, I have to share the soccer field with fixed income traders. So I don't know if that's a derogatory statement about myself or fixed income traders, but they all sit on the soccer field and they tell me what's in the consensus. You and I have lived our lives outside of the consensus, which is why I wanted to bring you on. So geopolitics, it has an effect on the market. It doesn't have an effect on the market. And if it has an effect on the market, what do you think happens in the Ukraine and Israel, Tom?
Yes, geopolitics definitely creates a lot of speed bumps in markets. And both the Russia, Ukraine, and Israel conflicts actually oversample the financial market participants because, you know, it's very personal. I mean, for Europeans, Ukraine really represents an important bastion. So for the European investor, they're putting a lot of weight on developments there. And of course, in the Middle East, I would say the percentage of our clients that are from that region is way above the total US population. So that's why it's such a central part of headlines and why markets have knee-jerk reactions. If we look at longer term effects and say, did wars change the path of financial markets versus either business cycle or monetary policy or even cash positions, it's actually unimportant. So I think it creates a lot of turbulence, but it doesn't change the fact that we're in a bull market.
Okay. Solana, up or down?
Solana is proven to be the blockchain of choice for retail investors. That's actually a good thing because it creates network effect. You know, you need financial market participation to create community value and community effect. So it is a buy, even though it is showing some congestion at times and it's not perfect, but the answer is a buy, yes.
Yeah, and they're fixed it. And the fact that it's slowing down like that is a sign that there's a tremendous amount of activity on the network, which is always good. I want to step back for a second, and I want to ask you about the five-year plan. And I want, because you're great at this, it's 2029. Have we or have we not tokenized assets, hard and soft assets, real estate, stocks, bonds? Second question, will I have my money on my phone, either a stable coin, a Bitcoin? Will I be able to walk into a restaurant and avoid the service charges from Amex or Visa?
You know, the answer to both is going to be yes. It's the timeline is going to be uncertain. It's probably going to be slow. Let's say next 5 years is 60 months. For the next 48 months or 50 months, it'll seem like nothing's changed. And then by month 58, everything's changed. Tokenization, which may not be familiar to everyone tuning in, is basically digitizing assets so that you can actually trade it on a financial market. That type of tokenization has been the history of financial market innovation since inception. Like Wall Street tokenized mortgages a long time ago. And what hasn't been tokenized just yet are things like homes or legal documents, or even, you know, attempts at artwork. That I think is all technologically possible. People who make money off keeping it off financial transactions are the ones preventing it. And real estate's a good example. You know, there's a lot of money that people make with title insurance and checking claims and approving mortgages that don't want to have this happen on a blockchain because it eliminates so much cost and it eliminates their job, but it prevents a lot of fraud. I think the next generation of consumers is already comfortable with tokenizing. That's why I think it's inevitable. And, you know, if you talk to any legal expert, you know, putting a legal document on the blockchain is actually one of the securest ways to store a legal contract, because the blockchain can tell that if you took a million page document, but you just changed one period in it, one word, the cryptographic hash would fail. That's why securing documents on the blockchain is so secure. And so I think it's just a matter of time. And then the same thing with money. We already pretty much carry money on our phone. Like Apple Pay is really digital money. But there's so many people with their finger in the pie. You know, today the banking system still gets a VIG. I mean, their sort of share of using the financial system globally, it's still 4% of global GDP is the cost of using the financial system. You might think it's free, it's expensive. So digital money like Bitcoin or stable coins takes that cost to zero. That's, you know, that if you take a $90 trillion economy, that's almost $4 trillion of unlocked money back to consumers. It's a huge amount of value.
I mean, this is the thing. I mean, you do a great job of explaining this, but if you could save that money, and again, just think about the productivity gains from the internet. If I don't have to go to the store, if I can hire somebody to go to the store and bring the goods to me at the house, and I'm saving the gas, and I'm saving the time, and I'm saving the energy, or if I can make a long distance phone call for $0 or do this interview for $0, the unleashing of productivity is staggering. And we're now going to be able to do that with financial transactions. So what happens to the banks in a situation like that, Tom?
Well, banks will have to re-engineer themselves. To give you an idea, I think if you look at the mortgage department of a bank, they have one employee for every 100 mortgages. So think about it, like there's a guy that's in charge of all the paperwork related to a mortgage. That's a lot of analog manual record keeping. And that's like, imagine if you go to a library and you needed like a librarian for every 100 books, you know, like, you know, libraries would employ a gajillion people. And a big bank typically has 200,000 employees, like a JP Morgan. In a world of tokenization and digital money and blockchain, the bank might only need 1,000 employees. However, the bank's profits might actually be higher, because half of a bank's cost is employment expense. So the banks could actually cut prices, but because they have so many fewer employees, they could actually make more net income. I know it sounds strange. That's why it's not a bad thing eventually for banks, but it's a lot of people who work in the banks that are against the idea of blockchain. And of course, they're the ones telling the CEOs that it's a bad idea.
Yeah, well, I mean, but you're also making a point that is comparable to Web 1, because everyone said, well, the phone companies are going to go out of business. The phone companies didn't go out of business. They found ways. They may have shrunk their personnel and they widened their technology, and they found ways to make even more money from the process. And also the unleashing of all of that technology from the Bell system, as an example, led to the rise of social media, Amazon, et cetera. So, So there are industries that are going to grow, Tom, from the technological innovation known as the blockchain. Am I wrong in thinking that?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, each of the banks today has enormous resources and institutional knowledge. Like, they have so much knowledge of their customer. And if you gave them a blank board and said, okay, imagine that you could cut 90% of your staff, but now with that freed up time and capital and sort of fresh eyes, you could change your relationship with customers. Banks could really make a lot more money because they know how their customers spend money, and they can do things to really improve their customers' lives. So you're absolutely right. If banks are innovative, I mean, I would call them becoming a fintech mindset, that they could really become better stocks themselves. That's exactly what happened to Meta. I mean, Meta used to be a web-based company. They totally pivoted to mobile, and it made them a far better company. I mean, every one of these Mag 7 has made that pivot, and that's what banks can capitalize on.
I think it's just important that people understand that there's no need for this whole doom and gloom about the introduction of new technology. So, all right. So, how are you so calm, by the way? I mean, is it the, are you like a Zen guy? Obviously my mother didn't raise me right. I'm like all over the place. You seem like you're like this.
I mean, yeah.
What is that?
Well, I guess I can attribute it to three things. I mean, one is just my family upbringing. My dad and my mom were both exceptionally calm people. My dad was a peace-loving doctor. Like, he was a psychiatrist, but always just wanted, the way he was, like, he just didn't want to create any pain or harm in the world. So he's a very Zen, as you said. The second, of course, is, I'm a Christian, and I think it's important to understand that we all report to a higher power. So to me, I endure a lot of criticism for our work, because sometimes our analysis offends people. They think we're either saying something they don't agree with, or we might be causing them pain if they're short a stock that we're recommending. But it's out of my control. So I don't take it personally, and financial markets are unpredictable. So I'm not trying to take it personally if we're wrong. And the third is that, we have a great team at Fundstrat. We rely on a lot of evidence-based work. So we're not relying and putting our reputation saying, this is my opinion about something and it has to happen, or my opinion's terrible. We use a lot of work and we say, look, this is the highest probability outcome. And if we're wrong, we acknowledge the failure is in the probabilities, but it's not like we would take it personally. So I don't know if that last one helps, but that's why we don't go crazy, because the stock market can make you crazy.
Okay. I mean, my sister always says to me that I would have done better if one of my parents was a psychologist and the other was a urologist. They would have covered both heads of your personality, and you would have been a lot cooler of a brother. But anyway, all right. But I admire you a great deal, because you're a visionary. You see the future. You say it calmly. Markets are in a little bit of turmoil because of all of the economic uncertainty post-COVID. But you've done a brilliant job today of parsing that data for us. We're going to take some questions from this miraculous audience that finds our show on the web. I'm debating between saving for a house in 2 years or buying Bitcoin. I find the idea of a 2026 mortgage scary. How would you approach this decision? This is Travis from Chicago.
Travis, that's a very good question. I don't know your age. If you're young, Travis, let's say this is your first house. The Bitcoin versus house is not the kind of question I'd want someone to choose between. And the reason I'm saying that is Bitcoin, you have to look at it with a minimum of a 3-year lens. You've never lost money owning Bitcoin for 36 months. And by the way, if you own Bitcoin for a 10-year period, you've never not outperform every other asset. So basically, Bitcoin is something you want to own and not try to time when you sell it. In fact, in some ways, you might just want to own Bitcoin forever. A house is really important because a house isn't a financial decision. You know, it's psychological. There's something really important about if you're building a family, you'd want to own that house with your partner and your if you have kids. And then you don't have to worry about rents because you got a mortgage that you locked in. I personally think interest rates are going to be lower in 2 years than they are now. So waiting, if you're renting now and waiting, that's not such a bad thing. But I'd have a hard time choosing between Bitcoin and a house.
All right, fair enough. Let's go to question number two. This is Jim from New Orleans, Tom. Why have so many people in finance and crypto taken up residency in Puerto Rico recently? Well, you and I both know the answer to that. What is the reason for that?
Yes. It's a good question. And, you know, many will probably continue to choose so. The reason people take up residency in Puerto Rico, and they have to have true proof of residency, they have to spend enough time there. And that means really spending less time in the United States, is that you have a very favorable tax status. Puerto Rico is a protectorate. I don't know if that's the right term of the U.S. So if you actually take up legal residency and tax residency in Puerto Rico, and you can prove that you're doing that, you no longer pay federal income taxes on income on both your wages and your investment income. It's a really high bar because you kind of pretty much have to stay out of the U.S. most of the year.
All right. I mean, that's good. It's a good reason. Parts of Puerto Rico are booming as a result of this. And of course, if money is your bag, move to Puerto Rico. I'm a New Yorker, Tom. Okay. I'm giving half my money to Mayor Adams and Kathy Hochul and Joe Biden. I'm a minority partner in my own life. Okay. But I love New York and I'm not going anywhere. And so, like I tell Spike Lee, him and I will be shutting the lights out on this city, not going anywhere. Let's go to the next question. The founder of Binance was just sentenced to 4 months, making him the richest U.S. inmate ever. When are we going to be done with all the crypto scams? This is Laurel from Connecticut.
Yeah. Laurel, I don't disagree with the facts of your question, but the spirit of the question, I think, is incorrect. What I mean by that is, if you look at scams and measure it as fines paid to the SEC or the US government to settle claims, the biggest scam in the industry are large banks. They have paid hundreds of billions of dollars now to settle things that have defrauded customers or cost customers money. And then the investment world, whether it's investment schemes or Ponzi schemes, like I don't want to name people, but they've paid more in fines to settle financial fraud. And with the exception of maybe Bernie Madoff, none have actually really ever gone to jail. There's not really ever been a CEO of a big bank that's gone to jail. So crypto does have its share of scams. Would you believe it or not that it's not different than the rest of the financial world? Since 1974, there's been 44,000 companies that went public or spun off. Over 50% fell 90%. Okay, of which, by the way, 70% of those went to zero. Most stocks won't even survive 10 years. So is that a scam? That's why I think you have to put in mind that crypto, it has created true wealth, but you have to be careful. That's why you have to stick with the proven blockchains like Solana or Bitcoin.
A great answer. Let's go to the next one. I've heard people predict Bitcoin hitting $100,000 or even $1 million. What about the utility? When will we see that? Betty from Georgia.
Betty, it's another good question. I think sometimes people ask these questions because they're negative on crypto. If you ask me, is Bitcoin useful? It's incredibly useful because one, It's already been a source of great wealth creation. It's heavily used. You know, there's more Bitcoin transaction activity than on PayPal today. And in fact, I think it's even approaching the amount of dollar volume on the Visa network, or it's like half the Visa. It's, you know, it's only one or two log functions from exceeding activity on credit cards. And dollar is probably less, has less utility than Bitcoin than you realize. What is the intrinsic value of a dollar? It is just the government's promise that it's worth a dollar. You know, you can't take the dollar to the treasury and you say, I want to redeem this for something else. They'll just give you a freshly printed dollar bill. So Bitcoin has a lot of use utility because it's so secure and secure way to move money. I'd say if you want to spend it at Starbucks, that's not really how you want to use Bitcoin. It's just like, you don't take gold coins to Starbucks and try to spend gold coins or your Picasso painting, you know? But it doesn't mean it's not useful.
All right. Very, very cool. Let's go to the next one. I've been interested in stocks around the cannabis industry. What's your take on this news about the possibility of easing federal regulations? Arthur from New York.
I don't have a lot of experience with looking at cannabis stocks or the economics of the industry. So I don't want to cop out, but I want to say I don't really have a good answer for you. One thing, though, to keep in mind, and it's not an indictment of cannabis industry, sometimes things can have a lot of demand. So like there's a lot of potential users of it, but it doesn't mean that companies in that industry make money. And so that second part is what you have to analyze if you're going to look at the cannabis industry. And I don't have an answer for that. I think it would take a lot of study.
Yeah, well, it does appear that this is also, you know, an election year tactic. The left has decided that that's good for them to allow people to freely smoke pot. It'll be interesting to see what happens to banking regulations, right, Tom? Because some of the federal regulations don't allow for cross-border transfer of cannabis-related money. So we'll have to see if this changes. Let's fire up another question. What is your take on real estate investment trusts? Marnie from Texas.
Marnie, at Fundstrat in 2024, we upgraded the real estate industry from an underweight to an overweight. So I believe there are really good opportunities in REITs. However, you have to be very careful because not all REITs are created equal. I think office is still in the midst of a really big down cycle that will take some time. And same thing with a lot of international real estate, especially markets like China. But, you know, industrial REITs seem really attractive. I mean, to me, that's like kind of what we typically recommend is if we're focused on a theme, we take the best types of companies. That's why we recommend Bitcoin and when we look at crypto. And I'd say in real estate, that would be things like industrial REITs.
All right. Another question. I'm becoming a relatively savvy amateur trader. What are your thoughts on options trading for those who are not professional investors? And our mutual friend, John Najarian, has joined Wealthion. He's joined the network. He's got a... he's got a new show on the network. And so congratulations to John. And the show was launched last week, by the way, did phenomenally well. And so you can find John and Pete Najarian on the Wealthion network. Just go to wealthion.com for more information. But let's talk about options trading for a second. What are your thoughts there?
For those who are not familiar with options trading, it's basically a way to invest, but make the dollars you're employing larger, you know, so it's essentially a way to use leverage without risking necessarily owing money. Good traders, have, and over time, there are some people who are really skilled traders. So I don't know your personal situation, Paul, but, I know the Nigerians, you know, do dispense pretty practical advice. Skilled traders are always going to do well and over time proven themselves. And then options, if they understand the risks, especially around things like time decay and the fact that there's a lot of exogenous shocks that they may not be able to control, they can use that profitably. It's not something we know well. We know we're pretty much we stick with straight equities and crypto at Fundstrat. So I'm not too familiar with specific strategies, but I would say option trading, especially things like call writing and protection, you know, are proven investment strategies. So as long as you're highly educated and you're a good trader, I think it works for people.
All right. I think it's a great analysis. Let's go to the next one. So Scaramucci, you've worked with Trump. If he gets elected, do you see taxes going down or staying the same? This is Jim, Mississippi. So, Jim, I appreciate you bringing this up. I do think taxes will go down if he has control of the Senate. If he doesn't have control of the Senate, I don't know how he's going to get the taxes down. But having said that, I think, and I would like to throw this over to Tom for a second, you know, this deficit spending that we're doing right now, and we're racking up $1 trillion every 100 days, this profligate spending without having an offset, I think is a nightmare long term for the United States, because it forces us to monetize the debt, to devalue our money. And when we make the money worth less, it causes a middle class and lower middle income crisis. These people don't have assets. And so if we cut taxes, it's just more unfunded future tax liability. But I do think the taxes will go down. Of course, listen, all of us are for less taxes, but then we have to be for less benefits on the other side coming from the government. What say you, Tom?
I think it is one of the most important generational issues to tackle. Of course, it's super unpopular, but I think you're absolutely right. The deficit in the U.S. is out of control. I mean, the U.S., pretty soon your taxes are going to be used just to pay for interest expense. I mean, is that really what you want your taxes to go to instead of like funding social programs? It's just funding payment on a debt. I mean, that's just insane. So it's an unpopular issue. It takes a lot of bravery because it probably will end someone's political career, but something has to happen. Otherwise, one day financial markets will bring it to a head, and that means the dollar could collapse or the U.S. defaults on debt. You know, by the way, if that happens, you'd probably want to own a lot of Bitcoin.
Yeah, no, it's a painful situation, but I think Jim's bringing up a good point about taxes. Remember, just frame this for people. George Washington to George W. Bush, $7 trillion in deficit spending. We've got Barack Obama, Donald Trump, and Joe Biden, $28 trillion of deficit spending. So, guys, not sustainable long term. And it's something that we really have to rethink as a society. Let's fire up another question. Summer reading, Anthony. Are there any books coming out that excite you? Any particular that might be available for pre-order? See, this is a chance for me to promote my own book. Do you see that? Thomas, do you see that? So hold on.
Yes.
Man. Don't go anywhere. Okay, look at me. Don't go anywhere. And I'm trying to do this without exposing the fact that I'm wearing shorts, Tom. But what can I tell you? It didn't work. Okay, now look. Here's my new book coming out in May. Please buy the book. Buy ample amounts of the book. Don't buy just one book when you can buy two, okay? From Wall Street to the White House and back. That's the nicest that Mike and Dave have been to me in the control room since this show started. Just so you know, they make fun of my hair, they make fun of my eyebrows, my height, but they finally teed up a question that was worthy of a question, Mike and Dave. Tom, you've been terrific.
It looks like a page turner too.
Yeah, page turner. It's an absolute page turner.
Yeah.
But if you do buy the book, you will be able to tell that I actually read the book, and it is available on Amazon and wherever books are sold. But Mr. Lee, you are phenomenal. I appreciate you coming on. I hope you'll come back to the Wealthy On Network.
Absolutely.
And I'll see you soon, but definitely up at Rayo's. I'll send you the dates for my tables. You pick one of them. All right, brother?
Okay. Sounds great.